Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World episode 162. I'm your host John Jordan. Don't forget to check out my daily email about what's going on in the world of blockchain gaming. You can find that at gamestx.substack.com. In today's episode, I'm talking to ArcDev. So ArcDev is one of the founders of what is now known as Hytopia. Back in the day, it was called NFT Worlds, and it was a way of monetizing Minecraft servers. So they came out of the Minecraft community, and they thought blockchain would solve one of these problems, which is monetization of Minecraft servers. What happened, however, was that Microsoft decided they didn't want people putting blockchain into Minecraft, even though Minecraft was an open source project. So the NFT World team had to think what they were going to do when basically their ecosystem was taken away from them, or the ecosystem they were going to build on was taken away from them. What they decided to do was basically build their own version of Minecraft. So that is what is now called Hytopia has become. It is a Minecraft type world which is fully integrated with crypto and blockchain. And since then, they've also launching their own infrastructure. So Hytopia is the game, and HiChain is the blockchain infrastructure it is running on, and that is based on the Arbitrum L2 scaling blockchain for Ethereum. And they're looking to see whether other developers are also going to use that technology as well. So lots going on in the world of Hytopia and HiChain. I hope you enjoy the episode. Don't forget to subscribe. Every week we are putting out new episodes, and April is pretty much already booked up already. So lots of good things coming. Don't miss out. See you next time. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. Very pleased that I have ArcDev with me to talk about all things Hytopia. How's it going?
Good. Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Good. So we had a little preamble beforehand, and I've warned ArcDev that we are going to have to tediously for him go through the whole sort of backstory of NFT Worlds and Minecraft and Mojang and all that sort of stuff. But we'll do that quickly, and we'll focus a bit more on sort of where we are now with Hytopia and HiChain and sort of, you know, a lot going on. So we'll try and focus on the future rather than the past, but we'll give some sort of past to contextualize ourselves. But first things first, let's find out a bit more about you. So can you give us a sort of a potted history about how you've sort of ended up at this point?
Yeah, sure. Going all the way back, we started originally as a product called NFT Worlds in October of 2021. I've come personally from a background of doing startups for like the last 10-12 years in the traditional startup space across games, e-commerce, all those sorts of things. Been involved in crypto since like 2014 with Bitcoin, and tracked Ethereum since 2017, all that stuff. But
that's quite a long history in crypto. So that's sort of you've drunk deep from the well there. Yeah,
I have. Yes, been keeping my eyes on this space for a while. But yeah, so we started NFT Worlds October 2021. It was during kind of the first NFT, near the tail end of the first NFT cycle. I was just dabbling around, curious, like what happens if we use, you know, blockchain and NFTs to allow people to basically put Minecraft worlds on chain that they could, you know, edit and share and buy and sell and things like that, that are then pegged to like the visual image. And it really quickly evolved from there. That was just the initial idea. It was like, oh, this little art project that like people can have fun with, and like maybe we can do some other things. But we had a situation where like lots of real Minecraft builders started buying these things and doing real projects, and people were buying these out of interest. And then I had a decent amount of background personally in the Minecraft space and knew some of the pain points there. And I was like, well, you know, maybe we can expand this a little bit more. Like, what if we solve one of the biggest problems in the Minecraft space for creators, which is like they don't really have good opportunities to monetize because of the restrictions of the Minecraft EULA. And we were like, well, if we use, you know, a single like token, like a game token created as an ERC-20, right? Like, and made it as a way to exchange value between all the different servers players play on, then it would be a way that creators could then take payment for in-game items and stuff in that token, and then eventually like go to, you know, DEX or something, and, you know, be able to have an alternative way to monetize that was outside of the scope of the EULA. So we did that. We launched all these systems to make it really frictionless for players to come into these servers that supported this feature. They didn't have to deal with their own wallets. They had, you know, just created an NFT Worlds account. They could sign in right in the game to all these servers. They transacted all this stuff. operated on Polygon. I think we facilitated 1.5 million in-game transactions using this token. So there's a lot of value flowing through, a lot of servers, a lot of creators using it. And I think at our peak before the ban hammer hit, we were around 100,000 active players. I think, yeah, that was around weekly active, if I remember correctly. And with that, we had launched this set of features in April of 2022. It took us a while to build, but it launched in April 2022. 3 months later, July 2022, Minecraft comes out with this EULA update and says, hey, like, no more servers can use blockchain. If they do, we're going to just completely ban them, where like players can't play on them anymore. And so that kind of ended our, you know, hockey stick trajectory that we were suddenly seeing, with people being like, oh my gosh, this solved my problem. And players were really excited about, you know, a cross server currency they could use. And
Can we just sort of halt there as sort of phase one? Because there's a few things you sort of skated over in a sure. slightly blasé fashion. So, I mean, you had original vision, you sort of call it an arts project, it's sort of an experiment that sort of spun out of control, mm-hmm. which is always nice when that happens in crypto. that can happen. But actually, it sounds like, you know, you were, you know, unlike most things in blockchain, you were actually fixing a sort of problem in the existing world sort of successfully. So how surprised were you that that you did get this sort of quite strong adoption? And was it adoption from people like you with a bit of a crypto background, or were you just getting the Minecraft people just like, oh, this is really cool?
Yeah, sure. I think I was relatively aware that the problem existed, like going into this, having seen friends and other people I know like operate Minecraft servers for profit in the past, and knowing how restrictive it was. On the adoption side, I don't think I expected it initially to become what it did, because I knew for an ecosystem like that, it's a chicken and the egg problem. You need a large scale of like Minecraft creators and servers that have players, and you need players that are open to a new system that is unfamiliar. And also, like, it can't feel crypto-y, otherwise they're like, what the hell is this? I don't want it. thankfully, like, in solving this initial pain point, we had one or two creators onboard into the system initially. The frictionless nature of it for the players was such that it was just like they were creating an account on a different service, and then this token just showed up in a web UI that looked like a, you know, a game currency. They didn't know it was on chain. If they wanted to look, like, they could see. But for the creators, though, it kind of became the spiral effect, where it was like, oh, this is working and it's really easy to add, and like, this is allowing me to now monetize my content in a way that I really couldn't before. And it's even easier because in game I can just do like a slash command as a player to buy something, and it automatically deducts the balance, and they don't have to go to websites and all this stuff. And so once that happened, just the myriad of more creators were like, I want to use this, and you know, the wave went.
But at what stage do you sort of realize this is actually, you know, this is actually creating a monetization layer that clearly, you know, Mojang or Microsoft are not accessing at all. So almost, if it stayed an art project, you may have, you know, you probably wouldn't have triggered them for a while longer. But obviously, I guess to a degree, probably your success is the thing that triggers, the thing that kills off stage one of the project.
yeah. Unfortunately, I am very confident that, you know, the traction we were seeing and how creators were using it got seen by Minecraft, Microsoft, and they're, you know, like, no, we don't want this. Which is, there is a second part to the story. We had actually been in touch with their policy enforcement team for months prior to this, and they're just like, oh, what are you doing? Like, this is interesting. And then 3 months before the ban, they just completely stopped like radio silence communication with us. And then we weren't even privately informed that this was going to happen. It was just, hey, public blog post is getting banned. We're like, what the hell? And then they never responded to us even when we tried to message them again. So.
No. That's an interesting bit of backstory there. But you must have sort of, having been in sort of startups and stuff, you must have sort of been aware that, you know, you were technically breaking the EULAs anyway. So,
well, no, at the time we weren't. Like, it was within the realms of like the language of the EULA that this was like,
okay,
it was a gray area acceptable. But the unfortunate thing with like building on top of a platform you don't have control over is that they can make rule changes at any time. You can get deplatformed and your business is dead overnight, right?
So were you, I mean, obviously, I guess you were surprised in the initial stages, but sort of, I guess to a degree, sort of looking back and where you are now, you're probably not surprised, and probably the best thing that happened to you in the long term is for that to happen, because obviously now you're not building an analysis platform.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, being where we are now, like a year and a half-ish later, and like all the progress we've made on what we're doing, the net long-term benefit, I think, is much more than had we just stuck to Minecraft. But yeah.
But in that initial sort of phase, obviously you're building on someone else's platform, so you shaped your team to do that. And I get, you know, was there even a knee-jerk reaction to just say, well, okay, this project's finished now, let's go off and do something else? Or how quickly did that sort of become, no, we can fulfill the vision in a different way?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think we were ever like, we're just going to shut this thing down. The
No.
reason being is because we had like in building past companies, the customer and like the user base being active and being strongly engaged in a product is usually one of the biggest indicators of like long-term trajectory. And I was like,
Yeah.
we have such a strong community here. We have like the cash reserves. We
Mm.
have a team that's like capable and knowledgeable and experienced that I think we could still execute on something as long as we can retain the community to stay behind
Yeah.
this, and stick with us with the vision. And so it was more just like how do we rally the troops and set a narrative around what we think we can do at this point, what we intend to do, and just go forward from there while keeping the community. So.
And not being an expert at all in Minecraft, have you basically sort of, I mean, not reverse engineered it from the, you know, to create the same product, but how you sort of reverse engineered the concept to build your own version of Minecraft? Would that be a fair way of doing it, or how would you describe it more better
I'd
than
say
I
like,
have?
yeah, of course. I mean, there's been a lot of voxel-based games made over time. Minecraft is actually built and has been publicly like said to have been inspired by a game called Infiniminer. So it's just regurgitations and iterations of ideas that have come over the years. Like we take inspiration from Minecraft, from the nostalgic like voxel feel, the way that like physics sort of feel, things like that, so that players feel like they're in a familiar environment. But the like the game itself, the client itself, and everything we've developed is it's completely from the ground up. Like we haven't, there's no like code decompiling or anything like that that's going on. And
And was that process, in a sense, sort of fairly straightforward? Once you decided this is what we're going to do, then you sort of no, clearly not.
It wasn't necessarily the most straightforward thing. Building a game engine from scratch is not easy, and our team wasn't structured with the intention originally to be those
No.
people that can build a game engine. So we effectively had to take months to find the right people that had the cross knowledge base of like building, you know, on top of graphics APIs and building game engines and physics and all these different things, while also like understanding like how does Minecraft as a game sort of feel? Like what's the nostalgic nature of it that like we want to kind of re-implement to feel familiar to players, so it's not just such a jarring change when they come over. So it was not easy. It took, you know, a few iterations of finding the right people, but I think we're in a good spot.
And how the community held up during this sort of time? Because obviously you NFT worlds, I think the original set of NFTs are still, I mean, they're still live. They're so obviously you're sort of entirely in control of them, but you went through Topia and then Hytopia is the sort of final brand for the product.
That was fun. The Topia Hytopia thing ended up being an annoyance with like very gray area trademarking. So we were like, all
Okay.
right, we need to shift the name to, we ended up being Hytopia. The community stuck well. I think that, you know, what we demonstrated when we were building NFT Worlds and the traction we saw is that like there's a clear problem in a very large like creator and player space that we're trying to address, and that hasn't been addressed for like over a decade. And so like outside of being a Web3 project, there's an opportunity from just a generic business standpoint that we think we can solve, and a problem that's being had at a large scale. And I think the community recognizes this as well, and so they've stuck around and continued to be, you know, bullish on the project because they think that, and we think as well, that we have the opportunity and likely, we hope, the ability to end up executing here, pulling lots of creators over, pulling lots of players over into this kind of like next generation creator focused platform that's familiar like Minecraft, but new to players and allows all new types of content and everything.
I guess it is interesting that you could sort of, if the initial business sort of continued, then obviously you could, that's a, could be, you imagine that there would now be a, you know, fairly sort of, could be a fairly substantial business adding, you know, monetization layer within Minecraft, obviously,
Yes.
you know, a subset of a very big market. And sort of, funnily enough, actually, I actually bought a copy of Minecraft to actually start looking around at NFT Worlds just around the time that it got bad habits. So that was the end of my $20
Yeah.
whatever. But my kids really love playing Minecraft. So
Yeah.
sort of, yeah, that's a big sort of market still. And you, yeah, so you could imagine that being sort of a successful niche. Whereas sort of now you've in a sense got the best of both worlds because you have the nostalgia for Minecraft, but
Yeah.
equally you're a new project. And so people who, you know, oh, but, you know, I don't care about Minecraft, that's for kids. So you sort of get it. Potentially, sort of both audiences, where previously you may only got a subset of one. So,
Yeah, I think having built on Minecraft initially helped as well because it got that creator community and a large amount of, well, a large amount of the multiplayer community to have visibility and kind of continue to track what Hytopia is doing. So we have, you know, that audience that is going to be the right fit for the product already, keeping eyes on us.
And what sort of where are you at the moment? You're sort of in. Beta, is an open beta coming at some point?
Yeah, so we've been in like a closed alpha iteration phase for the last couple of months. The beta, we have a closed beta, which will be thousands of people from our community that we invite in who can start playing, will be in April. Once that's done, we'll be doing an open beta, which is like public, go to our website, start playing, download the game, anything. We'll do the open beta once we've done enough sort of like QA iterations from having a large amount of players on the closed beta, and we're confident, like, hey, this thing isn't crashing once we have 10,000 players going and like all these different systems people are running it on, stuff like that. And then from there, it's this product iteration, marketplace, cosmetics, chat systems, social systems, game content updates, creator tooling updates, and going up, you know, to the races.
And I guess the headline figure is you said you've got over a million sort of sign-ups. I mean, quite what that means these days. But that's a certain amount of scale, isn't it? I mean, it's not.
Yeah, and that number should be taken, the millions should be taken with a grain of salt. So like the unique player registration, the player registration count is about 1.2 million on the website right now. But if you look at the Google traffic for like unique geo-distributed IPs and everything like that, it's about 700,000. So I think what had happened is that there are a number of people who either registered and had multiple people in the household, which would track from the same IP, or they register multiple usernames because they wanted to reserve more than one username. But I still think it's a fairly substantial number. It's in the hundreds of thousands of players that are waiting to play, at least.
And in terms of the experience, how, you know, saying initially you were sort of building a monetization layer. Obviously, now you're in charge of sort of everything. Obviously, you will have a monetization layer. That's what the Topia ERC 20 is still there. But how, you know, sort of in the open beta, how much blockchain will you have in there, and how much is sort of is that stretch goal
Yeah.
type stuff?
When the open beta comes out, we do want to ship an initial iteration of the marketplace relatively early. So the ERC20 will be used to, you know, buy content in the marketplace, things like that. It'll also be dually supporting of USDC. So we can have stable pricing of items so creators don't have to be like, oh, Topia dropped in price overnight. No, I'm not making as much kind of issue. The other thing is like the NFTs and stuff that you're buying on the marketplace will be reflective and show in game as like whatever cosmetics they represent. So if you buy a hat in the marketplace, you equip it, you'll have a, you know, a unique hat, all the other players see stuff like that. That'll be relatively early. I think we could see that as early as June, July.
And so do you feel that you'll be offering, but for people who really don't know any, I mean, I guess most people who are sort of interested in the project probably are in the crypto space to some degree, but potentially for someone who is like a crypto newbie, how would sort of Hytopia sort of feel like to them in terms of the sort of onboarding and initial sign
Yeah, this is a great question. This is something we really
up?
focused on even back in the NFT Worlds days when it was like, we have Minecraft players who don't touch crypto. They need to just feel like it's a regular game sign up. Same thing here. So with Hytopia, the registration flow, you can sign in with a social account, sign up with email. The systems that we've built, which kind of tie into HyChain, but The systems that we built are fully self-custodied, like player-side systems. So they own their private keys, they have everything like that. But their accounts are on-chain smart contract account wallets that are on HiChain. And it's basically as simple as, hey, I'm going to play Hytopia. I log in. I approve Hytopia as like a game for my, what will be a system called HiPlay. We can talk about that later. But any interactions I do in game, I don't even know there's transactions associated. I don't even need to know there's blockchain. It just works. It's fast.
And this would be a good point to talk a bit more about the infrastructure. So obviously, not obviously, but you announced as lots of sort of games are going through the same sort of process that obviously you were writing on Polygon before. Lots of people were sort of making a choice on what blockchain they were going to do. And in the last sort of 18 months, we've seen this sort of big explosion in sort of scaling blockchains, L2s, and you've built HiChain on Arbitrum. So given you're sort of building a sort of whole user generated sort of platform, was it always the goal that you would have your own infrastructure, or was that just sort of how the market has moved over the last year?
It's a good question. It wasn't always the goal.
No.
It became seen as a necessity back as far as the NFT world's days when we were doing all those transactions on Polygon. So part of the issue was we, to make it frictionless for players, were covering all the transaction fees. And this is happening on Polygon. But the issue was we would have days where either Polygon would see like shared network spikes in the traffic, or we would have days where like there'd be so many transactions from players and we'd be covering so much cost up front just because of the Polygon's network fees. And we're like, well, for both scalability and cost, we really should have our own chain. And so it was a thought even back, 2022, before the Minecraft ban. And it's since become more of a mainstream thing, but for us, it's like, we can't hit the 10 million plus like active player scale, 100 million plus, and the best case active player scale that we want to, and make it work with all the on-chain systems unless we have a chain that can scale with us, an infrastructure that scales with us, and costs that scale with us. So,
But it's sort of going back to stage one, you sort of, let's build a monetization layer for Minecraft, and you end up with, let's build our own entire UGC platform and our own blockchain. I mean, that's quite a difference.
Yeah, it started as a little, seed sapling, and it's kind of went like this as we went, and the scope, community, and the scale has grown, so.
And how, from a, sort of dev point of view and team point of view, how you've sort of mentioned a little bit about sort of finding people who can, work on game engine and stuff. How easy has that process been? Because, I don't know how, I guess you are sort of formally now a sort of a proper company, I suppose, to some degree, and sort of had investment money and all that. So, you've had to sort of professionalize to some degree, but equally, I imagine you're probably still distributed around the world, I would think. All those sort of blockchain things.
Yeah, it's been a number of iterations, I'd say. It's not difficult to find people who can just build and slap a product together. It is difficult to find people who can build and like maintain a world-class product for the long term that has considerations and, is intended for like, more developers are going to onboard into this code base and it needs to be maintainable and scalable and all these different things. So I'd say it's been doable. Like, that hasn't been an issue. It's just been an iterative challenge with hiring the right people over time. And we've went through a few iterations of that, but the team now I'm pretty confident in. And like you had mentioned, we are distributed all over the world. We have team members on the game engine team that are in the US, West Coast, East Coast, people in Australia, people in Europe. And I think those are the main regions where a game engine team spans right now.
And have you been able, because of the community interest and the sort of the news you've generated, is that really where you've hired people from? You haven't really been going to traditional game dev hiring places.
Initially it was where we were able to source and hire some people from. As times went on, we've done a combination of like aggressive outreach to people who have been just traditional game engine developers for decade, two decades. To like, we use certain frameworks and like foundational pieces of our engine. And we go into like the Discords for those kind of projects and frameworks and find people that have been longtime contributors or very, very familiar. And we interview them if they're looking for positions, kind of see if they're a technical fit, have the capability and maturity and experience to be able to a good fit for a team. And we've hired from there as well.
And how big, I mean, I guess your team is now split into the Hightopia product team and the High Chain sort of infrastructure team. Oh, actually, before we go into that, actually, you sort of announced that you were doing this sort of formal split. I think they're separate companies now, in fact. So again, how did that become obvious and how did that sort of process go about? Because I guess there were some people probably across both and they have to make a decision on where they're going.
Yeah, for sure. So it was relatively easy because the engineers that work on like Hightopia, the game client and all the game systems have been pretty much siloed to that regardless. Whereas like, you know, some of our full stack engineers, myself, who've done more like infrastructure-y things, blockchain level things, like the surrounding pieces sort of stuff outside the game engine, have bounced kind of between High Chain and Hightopia. They're mostly focused on High Chain right now, with a lot of the systems that we develop for High Chain just being used by Hightopia. So that split hasn't been too hard.
And in terms of headcount, how does it work out?
Yeah, on Hightopia for the game engine development team, I believe we have 6 people right now. On High Chain, these are like developers. Outside of developers on Hightopia, we have like Dan, our designer, like Max, one of my co-founders, will like oversee game product cycles, stuff like that. We have people doing creator biz dev over there, stuff like that. So I'd say like Hightopia is probably a team of 9 or 10 total. High Chain on the development side, we have 4 developers right now that are full-time on different systems across High Chain. And then Abby, who leads out strategy, everything non-technical for our team, who is the previous CEO of indie.gg. They're one of the biggest Web3 games guilds. So he leads out, you know, strategy, products, stuff like that on High Chain, whereas I focus on like technical implementation, making sure it happens. But the team there is probably about, in total, technical and non-technical, 7? I'd say about 7 of us.
So fairly tiny on both, really, considering...
Yeah. And I've always built my companies that way and like my startups. Yeah. Granted, you know, I've never built a startup that's gotten to like the $100 million plus scale, but I have built startups, you know, 7-8 figures, stuff like that. And oftentimes I found in the earliest days, small teams that are really potent and talented and can be self-sufficient move way faster than big, you know, many people have to talk to each other all the time kind of thing.
I guess it's particularly interesting given the fact you're all sitting in an office together. If you get the right people who can operate at that on different time zones doing that thing, then I guess you're correct. It's very lean and you can go very fast. But then, if that doesn't work, the wheels fall off quite quickly.
Exactly. Yeah, it takes the right type of person. Everyone on the team is very self-starter, self-motivated, and very async in communication. Where it's like they need something, they just DM. We don't need to do meetings and set times, and it's unblock everyone as fast as you can type of culture.
And this might seem like a weird question, but you know, so given your initial what you wanted to do, and where you've ended up as a pretty heavy duty sort of blockchain project, I mean, do you think sort of that blockchain element clearly is fundamental to what you're doing now? But has that aided you in terms of giving you that sort of community and allowing you to sort of deal with adversity, because that's very sort of blockchain compared to obviously it's bringing in a whole bunch of complexity in terms of stuff you're having to do, and maybe some people who you tried to hire said, don't like crypto, can you sort of balance those things, two things off?
Yeah, that's a good question. The blockchain element definitely makes it complicated on the hiring front for some people. There are game engine developers out there, game developers who are just like, I don't want to touch crypto, and are very much that like stonewalled, like I'm not even going to engage in this. And that's fine. Like, ironically, I found it's the younger developer in the younger generation that seems to be like that. When we've talked to the more mature, like 20 plus, 15 plus year game veterans, they're like, this is fine. We've seen so many iterations of technologies in the game industry. Like, we don't, it is what it is. Like, we've gone from the in-app purchase model to the just buy the game model to the subscription model to, like, now this marketplace type model on tokens. Like, it's, most of them don't seem to care in the older generation. Yeah. So, and ironically, the older generation is more experienced and more mature. And, like, some of the leads on the technical side of our team are, you know, 40 plus years old, and they are just in that boat where they're like, this is just another iteration cycle. From the community side, the blockchain elements have been really helpful. I think this is one of the challenges in game adoption, is that, like, if you don't get this kind of early days super fan base that's really excited about your game and are effectively like your organic marketing in many ways, it's hard to get the distribution. And, like, what blockchain brings is, like, you get this hyper fan base community almost that is so engaged and excited about the project for many different reasons that, like, they effectively become that organic fan out fan base in some ways. The other side too is, like, that blockchain element and that community is part of our organic fan base. But I think the other side, yeah, the other side is that this Minecraft community that is not specifically blockchain, that had been with us from the NFT Worlds days, and all these creators that saw the problems we solved, have continued kind of in the silence to watch and wait. And I expect and know, like, from the ones we talked with, that they will be rallying, like, around the product, assuming it meets their needs once it launches. So yeah. A little bit of everything.
And I guess the blockchain, or at least some elements of the blockchain community, are, as soon as the man tries to ban something, they're like, no, we're gonna you know, and obviously what you do, we're gonna build back better, sort of, you know. So I guess that sort of, and certainly that, you know, the, you know, even from my own personal view, I knew about NFT Worlds beforehand, but it was that really sort of, yeah, put it on the map when you sort of go, oh, what's happened here? These guys have caused this reaction, and I guess that is very, very crypto to.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing everything we can to execute, assuming we do, it'll be a fun story, and, yeah, you know, hoping for the best and doing everything we can. So,
and in terms of, you know, you've built HighChain for yourself, it is sort of a functional requirement that you need something to run on, so you're doing that, but equally you have ambition beyond that. So what, you know, given you're such a tiny team, what you know, why do you want to have the sort of, in some ways, the hassle of getting other developers to basically use your infrastructure? Because that's a whole bunch of, like, support, presumably at some point, if you do that, you need help, it's like a support team or some people who are sort of helping these other sort of developers to use your infrastructure, and it's more stress on the infrastructure and what. So what's the thinking around why you think you want to sort of do that?
Yeah, there's a few reasons. You know, I think Abby, who joined our team from indie.gg, has a really strong vision around, like, a chain that doubly is a games publisher, an investment arm, and provides the vertically, like, integrated technology stack, as being a really competitive edge that we can get as just an organization. Part of the reason for bringing in other games for us is that, like, I haven't, at least I think a lot of the other team members share the same sentiment, haven't seen a set of, like, technical implementation and user experience at meaningful scale where, like, Web3 games can see mass adoption yet. And I think, like, we feel strongly that we have insights that we think could be valuable to the greater community and the greater games, like Web3 game space, that once implemented could be the right pattern, just based on what we've seen with the Minecraft players in early days, different iterations we went through with past products that we open sourced, like something called MetaFab in the past. And so it's kind of just like, one, wanting to be a big publisher, competing with the likes of, like, Ronin and, you know, all the others of that scale. But two, like, genuinely believing the blockchain and, like, it being a solution to, like, marketplace like problems, black markets for game trading, stuff like that, can be popular as an alternative model for games at scale and meaningful for players, but it won't happen unless the adoption happens. And so we're, like, in this place of, like, we should really try and make this happen because we think it can and we've seen the benefits.
But I imagine that's still sort of fairly early stages at the moment. You just sort of announced it, so it's a little bit of wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, we have some early insights from MetaFab. Was a product we launched like a year and a half ago. It was a chain agnostic set of user experience, APIs, auth systems, wallet systems, stuff like that. We had a lot of really good traction with it and learned a lot as well there. And so it's kind of this next iteration of a product we know that can work at scale. It's like, how do we tie the whole package together at this point with the chain, with the technology, with the APIs, the user experience for games to be able to just add?
Mm-hmm. Cool. Good. Well, that's a good encapsulation of, I think, what you guys are up to. Just to reiterate, if I've got my notes right, so you are in currently in closed beta and looking mm-hmm. for sort of open beta in some months' time. So people can go and sign up right now at the Hightopia website if they want to get onto that. Anything else people should be doing?
They can go to the Hightopia website, pre-register for the beta, keep their eyes out if they want to play. If you're interested in HighChain, you can go to hychain.com, read the docs, check out the Explorer, Mainnet's live, all that stuff's up.
You had a successful node sale a couple of weeks ago, so people who are into that sort of thing are all minting their Topia tokens very happily.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, everything's going well. We're excited for the future. Team's growing, technology's growing, reach is growing, all that stuff.
And it's sort of I think it's obviously great for all blockchain games at the moment that the market sentiment is obviously a lot better than it was even 6 months ago. So people who spent last year building are sort of actually the market's actually come at exactly the right time for you.
So. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're in it for the long game. So one market cycle being in the bull is like, it's cool. But like at the end of the day, we really want to build one of the biggest like Web3 infrastructure platforms and Web3 based games in the world. So
cool. Good. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much.
And thanks to you guys for watching, listening to the podcast, however you are consuming it. Every week we are releasing new episodes, talking to the people who are building out this entirely new way of building games, building communities, coming up with really innovative stuff that we haven't seen in gaming before. So I hope you are finding it exciting too. Please subscribe and see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Awesome.